Welcome to episode 3 of The Iron Agenda, the podcast about War Machine, hordes, and whatever else is on our minds. Welcome, everybody, to The Iron Agenda, the secret ninja betrayal podcast of death. I'm Josh.
I'm Dave.
I'm Pat.
And I'm Stu. Yes.
Welcome, Stu.
Thank you.
To The Iron Agenda.
I'm excited. I'm tingling.
You should be.
I know.
You're glowing.
I love the edit feature of Audacity, I'm just saying.
Which feature?
The edit feature.
There are some things that just shouldn't be edited, though.
All right, well, the topic today is going to be a battle report that Dave and I put together. He and I played a game the other day with some new Legends models, so we're going to talk about that.
Hey, I just want to break in. Since I didn't talk a whole lot in the first episode, I did a little homework. I went home and I put together a list of some things to talk about. And I just want to throw out a topic for us to also talk about today. Maybe we could do it first. I wanted to talk about starch versus no starch. You know, how people like to have their dry cleaning done.
Yeah.
You know. And there's some other various things that, you know, we could talk about. You know, like,
can we kill his mic?
Using ceramic versus like a metal type iron.
Uh-huh.
What do you guys think?
Well, I'm a staunch starch man.
Cool, cool.
For me.
I don't like because it chafes a little bit.
It can. I mean, it's just about the amount of starch.
That's
it's,
cool.
You know, it's quantity, not quality kind of a thing.
You know, that's a good point because that's exactly what we'd like out of Pat.
I'm just saying.
Quality, not quantity, my friend.
Okay, well, I'll just go back to not talking again.
Wow, this is great podcasting.
Yeah.
I've cast my pot all over this.
All right, so for the game that Dave and I played, to get to an interesting topic.
Yeah, so this is going to be part one of our two-part Legends coverage.
That's right. And we'll have another battle report in a later episode, hopefully the next episode.
Well, you're saying battle report. We're not actually going to walk step-by-step the battle. We're just going to... Basically, we're going to comment on the new models that haven't been released yet for each of the two factions involved. In this case, Krix and the Protectorate.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just going to kind of use the battle we played with them to try and draw a little bit of experience and observations on the models and, you know, just, you know, speak with some sort of authority. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see what we do. Who knows? It may not be authoritative, but...
Probably not.
Yeah. So anyway, I took an Epic Gorshade list, or Igor, as they're calling him on the forums. I'll call him Epic Gorshade because that's his actual name. He was accompanied by a couple Arknodes and the Canker Worm, which I was really, really interested in getting on the table. He died quickly, but we kind of rewound just to see what he would do. So we'll talk about that in a second. Along with the Canker Worm, I had a couple units of Bane Thralls for his lead cadre, because he makes Bane Thralls cooler than they are. I personally am a big fan of Bane Thralls, always have been. Bane Knights are good enough, but Bane Thralls, I think, is where it's at. People think I'm weird.
There's a reason for that, and it's not just your love of Bane Thralls. But please, continue, sir.
Were you going to say something?
I don't think it's weird at all. I think, honestly, giving up Shadow Shift for stealth is an excellent trade, in my opinion. The problem is reach.
Mm-hmm.
If you just give the Bane Thralls reach, man, there's no reason why you shouldn't take them.
Nowadays, I always hear a lot of people say, oh, stealth isn't as good as it used to be. All sorts of things ignore stealth. Well, that's true, but I don't think there's that many things nowadays that ignore it than it did in the past. AoEs have always hosed stealth, no problem.
Well, I think each faction is starting to get a, you know, they're going to get a warcaster that maybe has a spell or a unit that has an ability that can ignore stealth.
Sure.
But like you said, even with that, it's still not ubiquitous. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, oh, everybody just completely ignores stealth. So, you know, with that being said, I think stealth is still a powerful tool. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, sure, some things are going to nerf it, but by and large, you know, it's something to have to deal with.
I think that even if a model has something that nerfs stealth, and I think the perfect example in this case that I'm going to use is Siege. He has an Illumination spell. You're still forcing Siege to cast that spell and forcing the Siege player to move a model close enough to cancel stealth. You're not getting the benefits of stealth, but you are still controlling your opponent's resources to an extent.
Sure. This is getting off topic, but in Gen Con, I was playing a guy who had the Harbinger. I had Scar. I was doing Sacklam every turn, knowing he was going to purify it anyway.
That's four of his 10 focus.
Cost me nothing but a Scarlock, nothing but a Scrap Thrall. And knowing that I was going to lose it, I didn't plan to have the extra focus, but I knew that he was going to be an 8 focus caster every turn, or 7, whatever it is.
6?
Oh, it costs 4?
It's 4 to cast Purification.
Purify costs 4? No kidding.
Wow.
Yeah, Purification costs 4 focus, so that only leaves him with 6.
Wow, I don't
know. And if he casts in Martyrdom, that's 3 of them.
He'd never cast, he cast it maybe once, but yeah, I wonder if he was even paying the 4. But either way, it's a huge resource commitment.
Absolutely.
So anyway, that's one thing that I really like about Bane Thralls that people just dismiss all too often, I think. I also had a contingent of Bile Thralls, as normal. Hey, it's a Krix list. I had Blood Gorgers, which I thought were pretty cool. they didn't do exactly what I wanted them to do, but they were still solid hitters with gang. Gang is really what you need to
make. They did what I wanted them to.
Yeah, I know they did. And you can explain how you screwed me later. And along with the Blood Gorgers, I had Slaughterborn, Mr. Gerlach himself. And he also didn't do much. Oh, well, he tried to kill Gravis, but he didn't do a whole lot.
You rolled like crap.
I did.
Your flying steel rolls, you rolled one attack every round.
I did. I think maybe I rolled two on one round.
That's what I always do.
Yeah.
One attack.
No, he's got a really high mat, so he hits almost all the time. But and then I also had Tartarus and a Scarlock. I may have had something else, but nothing too important. So the big things were Epic Gorshade, the Kinkworm, Slaughterborn, and his Blood Gorgers. So that's what I brought to the table. Dave, you want to talk about what you had?
Sure. I brought the man, the myth, the legend himself, Hyrax Varius.
Mm-hmm.
He did pretty well. I was pleased with him. I also brought his attached to hip buddy, the Hierophant. Then I brought both unique jacks. I brought the Blessing of Vengeance and the Fire of Salvation. You know, the Fire of Salvation doesn't have an affinity for Severius, but I wanted to give him a shot anyway, see how he did. I brought myself one Sand Ninja, the Legion of the Order of the Fist. I brought Epic Iris. Bring her out, see how she did. Since you couldn't play her, I wanted at least one of us to bring her in this game, so sure. Why not? I brought the Piper and a Choir, because that's 44 points it's given in most protector lists. And I brought a full unit of Bastions. I want to try them out. I brought Roven and the Honor Guard. And that left me with around, I think, 150 points to spend. And so I decided, because I had a little exemplar thing going, because, hey, that's what we got in this book, I decided to throw in Gravis. And then I figured he needed some souls, because the Bastions weren't going to die well or die quickly. So instead of bringing regular Knight's exemplar, who would be slow, and I was already going to use the Piper on the Bastions, I went ahead and brought Errants because they would be upfield and Gravis could run up to catch up to them. And that was the greatest mistake. That was the happiest mistake I made.
Yes, lots of serendipity for you there.
Yes.
Why serendipity?
Yes.
Because Bond of Life hosed me.
Pretty much Bond of Life trumps damn near everything Crick's got in Legends.
Specifically the Blood Gorgers and the Elite Cadre for Gorshade, because mm-hmm. both of their abilities, the Bane Thralls, for example.
And the Kankerworm.
So yeah, you pretty much hosed everything on my list, at least the frontline stuff. So sure. The Kankerworm, for example, I went up there, I had the Kankerworm in your face, killed a couple of Errants, only because you let me.
Right.
You could have easily, I took out most of the unit by that point, but Bond of Life would prevent the Kankerworm from destroying a model, thereby preventing it from getting a focus. And
well, I mean, we should just mention, I mean, with deployment, you put him about 9 inches back from my Errant behind a wall.
I did.
And so I, instead of piping the Bastions, which was my plan, I walked up, marched them, they charged over the wall, and three of them wrecked the Kankerworm.
Yeah. Needing sevens to hit, I expected two to hit, and you hit with all three. He would have actually survived, but right. Not by much. But still, you were able to easily put a hurt on him. He's defense 14, he's got Helldiver stats, or at least defense and armor, and that's just not that great.
You know, that is actually the great thing about the Kankerworm is the fact that, you know, he got wrecked in three, and he's got very weak stats compared to most jacks, although it's pretty beefy by Bone Jack standards. It's the fact of how his damage grid is laid out. Mm-hmm. He's got -2 off every column, and it's just flat across, making it a real pain in the butt to try and actually just go inert or dismantle.
I think this may not be completely accurate. You'd have to take out everything but, I think, one column to destroy him or disable him. Yeah. They might not be right, but it's something along those lines. So the Kankerworm died pretty easily. Now he can heal himself, but you have to have Rex on the table.
Right.
And
so he died, so we rewound the Errant's charge. Mm-hmm. I left one in on him, like, to kind of tie him in place.
Sure.
And the others walked up and shot the trolls. I think they killed four and two made their tough rolls.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
So the tough on those guys is actually kind of nice. And if you kill two living models with the Blood Gorgers, they get their two blood tokens or blood marks, whatever they're called. And that gives them the 4, 5, 6 tough.
Right.
Which I never actually got because of Bond of Life.
I was actually really, really glad I only brought 7 Errants, but I'm really glad that they were there because, yeah, your trolls didn't get their uber tough, and you weren't making more Banes.
Right. And that also affects Slaughterborn because he can use their blood marks.
Yep.
And he did not get to use any of them.
Mm-hmm.
You guys, you'd mentioned it, just because I'm not completely familiar with it. What exactly is Bond of Life and how does it work and how did it affect your game, Josh?
The Bond of Life, and Dave can correct me, he's the protector player here. Whenever a model in the unit is destroyed or suffers sufficient damage to be destroyed, another model in the unit within 3 inches guy, right?
Yes.
Can be destroyed instead of the model. Now, the important thing in this case is that the attack, let's say my Kankerworm deals sufficient damage to be destroyed on an Errant. The Kankerworm attacks, does the damage, Bond of Life destroys the other model. My attack didn't destroy anything, so I do not gain benefits from destroying a model with my attack.
Oh, wow, that really sucks.
Yeah, yeah, that affects the Cankerworm, it affects the Blood Gorges, in this case it all affects the Bane Thralls because of Elite Cadre.
Yes, now, which is, since we haven't stated it yet, if a Bane Thrall destroys another living model, mm-hmm. then you basically add a Bane Thrall to that unit. It can't activate that turn.
Correct. You place the new model within formation and also within Gorshade's control area, which means you could, you know, put a guy way over on the side if you needed.
Yeah.
I believe Bond of Light's also going to screw up Black Bane's Raiders with being able to
Add a
like
guy.
Second wind. That's another, and add a guy
right.
as well.
It's mm-hmm. Adding another guy to the unit. You're absolutely correct.
Because it's all about killing the model that mm-hmm. you attacked.
Yep.
So this specific ruling, is that mainly going to affect Krix, or does it hurt the other factions as well? I'm just trying to think from a Signar standpoint. I can't really think of a whole lot that says you specifically have to kill, like, you know, that said model. So is this more of a not anti-Krix thing, but it hurts Krix more than anybody else?
Offhand, I can't
know?
Think of anything Signarish that it would affect.
Yeah.
I can think of Battle Wizard that we had mentioned just a couple weeks ago.
That would work. That would affect him.
That'll get affected by Bond of Light.
This is true.
Because he has to destroy it with a melee attack.
Charge, and then he casts a spell. So.
Mm. Yep.
Okay. Interesting.
Okay. Well, why don't you go ahead and run down your list of models, Josh, you got there, and tell us a little about what they do and how they work for you.
Sure. I'll start with the Blood Gorgers. So the Blood Gorgers are...
Why don't you start with Epic Gorshade?
I'll save him to last.
Oh.
Because he's the key piece that actually kind of sucks.
He's the key piece that pulls everything apart?
He's the keystone in the arch that just makes it collapse. All right, the Blood Gorgers, they're a blighted Trollkin. They're sort of like Boomhauer, except they're blighted, and they don't have ranged attack, so they're sort of not like Boomhauer in that respect. So they're medium bases. They do have Furious Charge, so they can charge at, you know, extra distance, and they can go over rough terrain, but they don't ignore the penalties. They can't charge over obstacles, though. So they have this ability called Blood Drinkers. Anytime a model in the unit destroys an enemy living model, then they mark one of these blood marks, and they have 8 of those. If they have 2 blood marks... And remember, this is any model in the unit, so all the models in the unit contribute to this pool. If 2 marks are marked, then they're tough on 4, 5, and 6, because they do have the tough ability. So they're extra tough once they kill 2 models, 2 living models. If they kill 4, they have something called Gore Fueled, and that gives them an extra 2 speed and an additional die on melee attack damage rolls, which is really cool.
So basically they become weapon masters.
Essentially, yeah.
What's their base speed?
They're speed 5.
So they go
going up to
7,
that's significant. That's very
huge.
Significant. And especially if they have Furious Charge for the
right.
extra 5.
Now, they are single. These aren't champions. They are single model.
True. Mm. But the tough, especially if you get the 2 blood marks and they're tough, it makes them pretty cool. Although they'll get knocked down. So, anyway, and if they get all 8 marks, then they have something called Slaughterhouse. A Slaughterhouse is sort of like, there are other abilities in the game like this. If they destroy a model, they can move 3 inches.
So it's kind of like the Wolves of Orbros, the Wolf Riders.
Yes. They do not get to make an extra attack, so it's not like they're going to chain all these crazy attacks or anything. But they do get to move a little bit farther.
Well, they do have 2 attacks, though, so they could kill and move.
They
kill.
Do, sure.
It's and a you lot could like always. Madrix. I'm sorry.
Sure, and you could always, like, demoniate them, too, with Terminus, and then they would chain, and then they would be killing machines.
It's a lot like Madrix Feet. Kind of like it works like Cleave in D&D.
It's like Crusher, yeah, Madrix Feet.
Sure.
They're Fearless, they have Gang, so if you get 2 of them in melee, then one of them's going to get a bonus, assuming they kill the guy. The other guy might not get the bonus, but. So Gang gives them extra attack and damage, and they are tough. Paired with these guys is General Gerlach Slaughterborn. And he's pretty cool. He's a model that people have been waiting for a long time.
Do you think they are going to be happy with him?
I think so. I think he's pretty cool. You have to take Blood Gorgers to make him, you know, work as effective as he could.
Now the Blood Gorgers, what's their field allowance?
They are 2.
So you could bring 20 of them and
sure.
him.
Mm-hmm. And okay. he's only 36 points, and he's a pretty good melee beat stick. That's something that Krix lacks a lot. He's less than a Boker. He has flying steel like a Boker. So he's on par with the Boker, I think.
He'd make an excellent Boker client.
Actually, that's a very good idea, putting a Boker on him. He has Blood Glutton, which is sort of like the Totem Hunter ability, except he gets +1 strength and armor anytime he kills a living enemy model. Doesn't matter what it is.
Is there a limit to that?
5.
Oh, okay.
Still. It's hard enough to get him with the Totem Hunter. This guy gets him anytime he kills something,
yeah.
Which is very, very cool.
Well, I was just hoping that he couldn't go, you know, infinite with that.
Oh, no, sure. Yeah. And it is an enemy, so it's not like you can slaughter your own guys. He has Butchery. And this is pretty cool. Let's say you've got a unit of Blood Gorgers and they have all 8 blood marks marked. This is an ability on him. At the end of, say, my turn, if I have Slaughterborn, each friendly Blood Gorger unit in his command that has 8 blood marks marked, they loses all those marks, and then that unit activates again. So if they've killed 8 models, they can activate again, potentially.
all Blood Gorger units in his command. Is that what you said?
Yes.
So if he's
if that unit has eight, it can affect.
Okay. So it's not one loses all eight and they both activate.
No, correct. That is not the way it works. But just off the top of my head, I can see them activating again, remaining in his control, possibly killing eight more models, and then activating again. So they could keep doing it.
It's not an action?
No, the ability isn't something that's it's passive. It's at the end of my turn. It's not something that you have to use. You don't say, I use butchery. Butchery is always in effect.
Oh, really? Whoa.
It's like commander. Commander is always in effect.
Well, so here's the key, and this is something Privateer Press will have to clarify.
Probably.
The question is, basically the trigger is end of your activations, all of your models' activations.
It's not triggered by ending your activation. It's triggered at the end of my turn.
Oh.
Well, it says at the end. I don't even know if that would really be a trigger. This would be something that would be nice if they defined, something like a trigger. The way I'm reading it, it could be read any time after your turn, but it might be read, it can only trigger once. It's not clear.
I sounds like Privateer Press is going to have to come out and say this can only be done once, unless they don't intend it. Because from what you said, it sounds like if all conditions are met, at the end of your turn, they can go. And then if they lose all those eight blood marks again, mm-hmm. they could go again. If they lose all eight, they could go again. Mm-hmm. You know, just on and on. So they're either going to say, no, we only meant this to be for once, or they're saying, nope, you can do it as many times as you're able to.
Which would really be sick. Evil. It'd be very situational.
But sure. Consider how hard it's going to be for them to run through and defeat 16 things in one turn.
And stay within the command radius.
One guy needs to be in 9, though.
Oh, well, that makes it easier. So. But you're right. I mean, so they can move their full movement, though, you said?
They activate again.
Oh, so they, so if they can they're, even if they're charge full up, they can even, everything. Yeah, they could go 7 inches or a furious charge of 12, as long as you keep one guy within.
That's
I mean,
mean.
You might get a couple times. Realistically, you might get them to
well, they would never they would never be able to charge the 12 at the beginning of activation.
Because they would have,
they have to have four marks to do that. Marks, either way, so. They can charge 9, or gotcha. 10, rather.
So. Right. Yeah.
So anyway, it's potentially a sick combo. Even if you only activate them once, it's still another activation is always good.
Sure.
He also has commander. He's commander for Krix models. He's fearless. He has flying steel. He has something called gore charged. If he has one or more friendly blood gorgers in his command, he gets all of their blood mark bonuses. So he could get +2 speed.
And uber tough.
He could be uber tough. Uber tough. He can move 3 inches and then weapon make his master. Flying steel attacks.
Ugh.
So he's pretty cool. He has terror, which as we saw in Dave's game against Epic Severius, that might actually matter.
Not
the way you want it to matter.
Not the way I want it to. He's tough. He has unstoppable charge, which is sort of like furious charge at all times. And he has a great axe with reach. So he's a pretty big beat stick. I think your idea of putting a Boker on him may not be that bad. It's a very cheap way to get two hard hitters out there.
The only fear I'd have for that is your Boker's killing totems. Basically, you're going to want him to collect.
That's true.
But honestly, I'd rather have the stuff dead early. Kill stuff as soon as you can.
Sure.
Well, I would consider it more about along the lines of the Boker's there for Garlak's backup, not the other way around.
Right.
Where a lot of people keep the squishier, you know, client back while the Boker goes out and softens things up. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be the exact opposite, where Garlak wants to go and do the initial hits, and if it's still staying there, he kind of shrugs, looks at it, turns to the Boker, and the Boker just goes nuts.
Mm. Certainly an option.
Bokers. When are they going to make one of those the Protectorate can field?
I don't think they will.
Oh, I think they have one of those. It's called a Devout.
Yeah, I'll quickly go over the Cankerworm here and then get to Igor Shade. Cankerworm has something called Ablation. If he's attacking a corroded model, he effectively gets armor piercing.
Like every attack. That's vile.
Right.
Wow.
He doesn't have reach, but he could.
Yes, we've actually heard stories of locals who use them to wreck Centurions in one turn.
Sure. Just as long as it's been, you say, as long as that model's been wounded once?
No, it's corroded. If you have corrosion, if you have the corrosion continuous effect
like,
on it.
Like, for example, a Bile Thrall purges on you.
Oh, my Pal 12 Bile Thrall purges on your armor 24.
Are you Venomum?
Or a more interesting use is it actually makes Defilers worth fielding now.
In some situations, maybe.
Mm-hmm. There's a better argument for them than there was before, at least.
I'll grant you that.
Yeah.
What's the Pal? So all the Cankerworm. All the Cankerworm's attacks are considered armor piercing for that?
Anytime he attacks the model.
And what's
it? Anytime he rolls damage, which will typically be only on his attacks.
What are the power of his attacks?
He has a 10 and a 12. Both melee.
Awesome. Now,
so even and plus damage on a Cod or Jack.
Mm-hmm. The Cankerworm is also advanced deploy, which really helps with Krix, and we have two advanced deploy Jacks now. That's interesting. He has an affinity for Asphyxius, which in that case, he acts like a hunter. You double the control range for the purposes of allocating focus.
Oh, cool.
He has all terrain. He has an imprint called Weakness, so you spend a focus, and anytime he damages a model after he does the imprint, that model suffers the weakness effect, and that model rolls one less damage die when he makes damage. He has an ability called Meat Grinder. He rolls an additional damage die on melee attack rolls against living models. And when he destroys an enemy living model, he's going to get a focus point.
That's going to be mean.
So as long as he can hit, he has Berserk, or is, selective Berserk.
I'm sorry, that last one, the Meat Grinder, is that one that's always up, or do you have to spin a focus?
That is always up.
That's always,
always up. Wow.
So if you put a bunch of guys tightly around him, he's got a mat 6, which is respectable for
auto-boosted.
Assuming they're little living models, yeah, that's great.
So you know what you do against that?
Shoot him.
Field errands.
Shut up. We'll get to that. He has a special, actually, I'll say this first. And as a replicator weapon, he has an ability called Adapt, which essentially lets him take the stats of the weapon on a rec marker and sort of steal it for his own. It
has to be an arm weapon, though, right?
It has to be an arm weapon, I believe.
Mm.
So you can't take the lightning coil of the Thunderjack, for example?
Yeah.
Correct.
Or bombards. Are those aren't...
Those are not weapons either. It's true. Yeah.
Right.
And whenever he does that, he can use a special action called Salvage, and that will remove the rec marker from play, and it allows him to heal himself. He has Stealth. He has an ability called Scutter, which means after he makes combat actions, if he's no longer in melee, he can back out. He can essentially bushwhack, sort of. He can move his speed in inches. So it's not really bushwhack.
But... Oh, can he really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shoot. I screwed that up the other night.
But he has to make sure he cannot be in melee at the end of his combat action.
Yeah.
There have been people on the forums who are a little confused about this. They're wondering whether he can scutter attack, scutter attack, scutter attack. But it's after you finish your combat action. So you cannot possibly make attacks after your combat action. So you scutter after you finished all of your attacks.
Right, but because of Meat Grinder and everything, you can go through... the other night, I had gone through, charged in, and basically done that little chain combo there to mm-hmm. take out an entire unit of Widowmakers, mm-hmm. and I had forgotten about Scutter, otherwise I could have scuttered back and I would have avoided the cavalry altogether.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Shoot.
And that's all for him, actually. He's, like Stu mentioned earlier, his grid is actually pretty well spread out, so he's very difficult to take out.
Yeah, I was looking at that myself. I think you're right. You have to destroy 5 of the 6 columns to take him out in any way, even because, or you got to get the hull. I mean, but the hull is the top 2
mm-hmm.
marks exactly. in each column. So it's either 5 of 6 columns or, you know, it's pretty much, like I said, almost destroy me completely.
The only other way I can think of doing it would be to use Meltdown. Okay, Gorshade. Quickly, his feet, which I'm lamenting about pretty much.
It's worse than the High Reclaimers.
Yeah. I don't want to whine too much about it because it's probably not as bad as I think. It's just that I have not had much luck with it. I've used it defensively, and the thing that sucks about it is that you have to remove your own models. What you do, you return destroyed non-character friendly Krix warrior models to the table, and for each one you put on the table, you remove one of your own models
from play.
You remove it from play. That's correct. And the models you return, like the High Reclaimer, or not necessarily like the High Reclaimer, these have to be put in formation with their existing unit, the unit that they started out in.
So that unit's been wiped out, then they can't come back.
Yeah, they have to return to their original units and placed in formation. So if you can manage to wipe out the entire unit, don't even have to worry about his feet.
You're lucky that I left one Bane Thrall uh-huh. alive, otherwise you wouldn't have had anything to feed on.
I think that's correct. I had some trolls. I probably could have put a couple trolls back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now here's a question with that feat. With things like Blackburn's Raiders, another Legends unit,
mm-hmm.
it says non-character models. Now, even though it's a character unit, because Blackbane himself is a character, can you bring back just the grunts?
I'm not sure, but I think you would not be able to.
I think that the entire unit is considered characters.
I think so. Because, for example, if Blackbane were to die, you still would not be able to do non-character attacks on the unit. If right. that makes any sense.
Do his grunts have names in that unit?
No, they're just troopers.
Yeah, because I know the Signar gun mage unit, they're all 3 names.
Right.
Right.
Well, he leads a unit of 10, so it's him and
oh,
nine.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought this was another like a 3-man.
No, his equivalent's a Wither Shadow Combine.
Right. Right. The feat's meant to prevent from getting back Wither Shadow Combine, folks, and I understand that, but I was wondering about the grunts in a character unit.
Yeah. I think they remain characters. That might be something that we need to ask on the forums. Gorshade's Elite Cadre, +1 Mat Rat in Command as usual to Bane Thrall.
Which is huge given the Krix lore mat.
It is. So I'm loving having a 7 mat on one of my favorite units anyway. And whenever one of these Bane Thralls destroys an enemy living model, you can add, like Tartarus, you can add another model to that unit. But it cannot activate that turn.
And combine it with Cursed from Banelord Tartarus and Dark Shroud, and it's really just, there's some awful awful combinations there. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. He has Siphon, like his original form. He has Terror. He's still undead. Imagine that. He's a new sword called Voas, which was it Nissor's sword, or was it just a sword? Yes. It was Nissor's sword. It has an ability called Critical Brittle as Ice. It does double damage, exceeding the target's armor on the critical, of course. It has reach, and he has a special attack called Winter's Wrath.
This thing's awesome, isn't it?
It's Winter's fantastic. Evil. Here's what you do, folks. You use the special attack. You roll a command check on Gorshade.
Using?
You fail it. Oh, using his base command.
So you can't increase that with the Wither Shadow combo.
You can puppet master it or puppet strings it, but you're still going to fail, from my experience. Gorshade then goes stationary. End of game. Or if by some weird chance you actually make the command check, the thing that you destroy, because you do have to destroy it, everything within 2 inches of that guy becomes stationary.
Now, he does get an extra damage die on this.
He does get the extra damage die, which doesn't help you.
If you're stationary. So the first time you used this, you became stationary.
First time I used this, I had Tremulous from the Wither Shadow Combine, put Puppet Master on Gorshade.
Uh-huh.
I needed an 8, I rolled a 3 and a 6. No problem, I re-roll the 6, because I have to roll another 6 to fail it. What did I do?
Rolled another 6.
I rolled another 6, Gorshade, bam, stationary.
Wow. And where was he at in the board when that happened?
He was very close to Butcher, surrounded by Democore.
Ooh.
Who just killed him.
Yeah, there was...
Yeah.
Wow.
And so then you tried against me too, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Boxcars.
Yep.
Ugh.
And we decided, that's boring. Let's just keep playing.
Correct. And then I tried it again later, uh-huh. I think, and I rolled a 9.
No, actually, you rolled an 8.
I did roll an 8, but...
But you were...
It was in Epic Severius's command radius, which is 18 inches now, and that meant I was actually down to a 6, which meant that I failed it.
No, you weren't. Ooh. Base command.
Times
2. If you can't up your command, he can't lower it.
Oh, either. You know, he's correct.
Yep.
Stu's absolutely correct.
You are one
out of four, baby. Thank
that
you,
is
Stu.
The only saving grace.
Thank you,
to
Stu.
That
I
base command.
Did not even think that. So, yes. All right. That made my day a little bit brighter.
So what do you think of your stuff overall?
I think, actually, I like the Bane Thralls a lot, like I've been saying. The Blood Gorgers, I think, are pretty cool. I did not have a chance, thanks to the Bond of Life on the Errands, to actually get them the Blood Marks. Slaughterborn likewise suffered because the blood marks were lacking. And the Cankerworm I thought was really cool. It's just that I don't think he's a frontline unit. You got to keep him back a little bit. Wait till the heavy stuff comes to you, mm-hmm. and then use him to destroy it.
Unless you're playing with Asphyxius, I think he could go.
Oh, absolutely. Asphyxius, putting a Parasite on the target, putting Scything Touch on the Cankerworm, assuming even if it doesn't replicate anything yet, that makes it effective strength, Poplar Strength 14,
yeah.
Armor Piercing possibly. That's crazy. So I'm liking my stuff except Epic Gorshade. And Epic Gorshade is still okay. I didn't go over his spells, which are really unit-based. He has one Jack-friendly spell, so he's still very much a troop caster, I think.
Well, the one key spell that he does have, which you cast, mm-hmm. or upkept,
sudden
was
death.
Sudden Death, not Death Race.
Right, Sudden Death.
And basically gives them counter charge.
Yep.
But after they charge, regardless of whether or not they hit,
mm-hmm.
they're removed from play.
Yep.
And the only saving grace is with the +1 mat,
mm-hmm.
and if you put it on a Bane Thrall and they kill somebody, you
right.
get the unit back, or you get a model back.
Right. Assuming you hit and destroy.
Yeah.
And you can put it on something else, but, you know, if you can't get an extra model from that, then they're RFP'd immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So if you put it on my Blood Gorgers, I'm going to lose good Blood Gorgers.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Well, the fun part really comes from putting them on the Bane Thralls, because with the combination of everything else, yeah, they can't activate the turn they're put into play, but it's not during your turn. So...
Sure.
They put it right back out, and boom, there's another potential counter charge
mm-hmm.
plopped out right there.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
so it can trigger on those models, yeah.
Hmm.
And when they make more models, if you're lucky enough, you can also use that for your feet. So you can remove and play models that you didn't actually have to field, and so you're not paying points in a sense.
Also, one thing about that spell, which I think we talked about when we played, with Tartarus beckons, it says a model can't move
right.
for that turn. Right, for the rest of the turn. So you can still sudden death after you
right.
get beckoned.
Yep, or either way.
Right.
So yeah, that's what I took. What mm-hmm. about you, Dave?
All right. Well, as I said, I brought Hierarch Severius, who is awesome. And I'm going to start with him because he's the pinnacle of my army, mm-hmm. unlike Josh.
He's a capstone that does not cause your building to collapse.
This is true.
I honestly think he's going to be the new evil ad, new person everyone complains
about. Well, he did make Vlad run away in fluff. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
You know. And he's a Hierarch. What are you going to do?
Nah.
All right. So Hierarch Severius, he's pretty similar to his old version. He did get a couple points of rat. His rat's 6 now, which is important, as we'll see later.
He had a 4 before?
He had a 4 before, wow. but he had no ranged attack before.
That's no range at all.
Yes.
So he goes from no range to range and a
a good rat.
Well, no, he gained eye beams.
He gave up. He went from having no range to having range with ashes to ashes.
Whatever.
That look of disgust says it all right there. Like I said, he's got a gun now, basically. His staff is both a ranged and melee weapon. It's range 8, pow 10, but basically it's D3 ashes to ashes.
I'll say, on the surface, it doesn't look that impressive when you're just reading it, but I like you said, you're going to go into it. I'm anxious to hear how awesome this ranged weapon is. That combined with his ability to shoot it through an arc node.
His melee weapon is Poplar Strength 13, but also causes ashes to ashes. Now, here's the thing. If Sorsha's sitting within 5 inches of her jack, even if she's wind rushed, I run up to the jack, and I'm going to hit it 9 times, and she's going to take 9 POW 10s.
Because of the ashes.
Because of ashes to ashes.
Or 4 possibly boosted or something.
Or 4 boosted.
Oh, my God.
And considering her armor is, what, 13, 14?
Yeah, 14. Yeah. I think
she's
14.
Not, she's not
even if she's
focus.
Camping on focus, wind rushed, that's still only 4 focus added to it. Yeah, that's so been a lot of hurt on Sorsha.
It's awesome. All right, so Sebi's feat does one of two things. It either affects D3 plus 3 undead models, and they all take POW 12, which you can boost if he has focus. Or you take D3 plus 3 living enemy models, and you take them over, and they can activate as solos.
For that turn only.
For that turn only. Non-characters as well, so like you can't take ladder more, but you can take the rest of the cav. It's not as bluntly powerful as a lot of the prime feats, but it's not bad.
Not bad at all, no.
No. Like Irisk, he can give any number of any commands to anybody, which is awesome, because his command range is twice his command set. His command range is 18 inches, 2 inches farther than his control radius.
That's right, ladies.
That's right, ladies. That's one big staff. Also, anybody in his command range are at minus 2 command, like we said, which doesn't affect Gorshade as much as we thought it did, but it's still useful. He does get a Warjack bond, and his Warjack bond says if there's a focus point on a Warjack once per turn, that Warjack can spend the focus as soon as it gets hit by any attack to ignore all damage and effects of that attack. That's awesome. And since he can give the Jack 4 focus, and he's got 8, it's always useful to keep it on. Yup. Now, I mentioned his gun that he had, and he has a Rat 6 now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Pat, all your Warcasters have guns, right? Pretty much?
Almost, yeah.
Can't think of one that doesn't.
Gosh,
at least a range attack of some sort.
I was thinking Darius, but yeah, the steam cannon. I mean, he's the wrench. He's got 3 weapons. He's got a wrench.
He's got the wrench, the quake hammer, and the steam cannon.
So yeah, I think they all have weapons.
Well, here's a question for you. How many of your Warcasters can channel their gun?
Nobody can channel their gun. Kane's the only thing that would come close with his extended, spell range.
So you'd say only one?
Yeah.
I think, only one War Machine caster is going to be able to do that.
That's extending
it. Not even two.
Yes.
Not two.
And does, just out of curiosity, do Kane's guns ashes to ash? They don't, do they?
No.
Okay, just checking.
This is nothing but humiliation for anyone not playing Protector.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, and his melee weapon has reach, mm-hmm. and it does an extra point of damage for every fury point on a model.
Whatever.
All right.
That coupled with the fact that...
That doesn't even affect your pet.
Yeah.
I know, but they all get, they're all weapons masters and all this other stuff. I'm like, oh my God.
The Protector loves you. It's okay.
Yeah, well, the Insignar was like, can we please have a weapon master thing? No, you can't. Sorry, go ahead.
All right, his spell list. I'm going to run down a couple of the highlights. I'm not going to hit all of them. He's got 8 spells, obviously. He's got a spell that kind of does convert now. He has to hit with it. It's only 1 focus, so. He has a control radius spell. Cast 2 focus, or 1 if you've got the Hierophant. It's not upkeep, but basically everyone in Sebi's command radius is not affected by failed command checks. So that includes stuff like pirates taking them over, as well as fear. Mm-hmm. And once per turn, on your opponent's turn, not your own, if your unit passes a command check, if any unit passes a command check, every model in that unit immediately make a normal attack, ranged or melee. He also has a spell called Creator's Wrath. This is awesome. This is how I ended the game, actually.
Yes.
It's a 2-focus spell. It basically says...
One with the Hierophant.
Well, that's how I wound up using it, but yes. Yeah. But it's a 2-focus spell. It says all of his attack and damage rolls get an additional damage die, or additional attack and damage die, and his attacks can affect Incorporeal, and he can charge him as well. With the Hierophant, this costs 1 focus to cast, meaning he's got 7 left.
Or 8 if you pull from a wreck.
Or 8 if you pull from a wreck, which he then charges Gorshade with. And he goes ahead, he misses his charge attack because he's a clumsy old man.
Only because I wasn't stationary for you.
This is true. Wait,
how did you miss a stationary target?
He didn't know.
He wasn't stationary. I actually went ahead and boosted to roll four dice because you can do that. It's an additional die. It's not a boosted.
Right.
I missed the charge attack, but then I hit with the rest of them.
With four dice?
He's a mat four.
Oh.
He needs a nine to hit him. So that's actually below average.
Yeah. Wow. So, yeah, I mean, that's...
I'm sorry, you need an 11 on 11.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, and this additional dive attack and damage, it doesn't affect his ranged attack. It's just melee. But still, it's pretty good. And then one more spell that I want to mention is Holy Ward. Target model unit, plus two defense, and can't be targeted by spells. Doesn't sound like much, but when you put it on a unit like the Idrians, which I already love, it's awesome. It's an upkeep spell, of course.
There were plenty of times during that game where I wanted to hit your errands with spells. I didn't really care too much about the defense, but the fact that they were warded, essentially, was really hurting me.
Yeah, it's great. It combines what I like most about protection of Minoth, the spell, Kriessa spell, and the ability to protect from spells. It's great.
Yep.
And that's Sevi, and he did his thing well. He did a good job.
Mm-hmm.
Blessing of Vengeance, I like this Jack, especially with Severius. As I mentioned, its bond is basically visions. Its affinity is once per turn, when Sevi channels through it, he gets plus two to the damage rolls on his spells. Now, here's the thing with Sevi's staff says he can channel like a spell.
What does that mean?
Yeah, exactly. Privateer Press has not actually clarified what that means. If he channels it and he doesn't have Creator's Wrath up, can his range attack still affect Incorporeal? I don't know.
I guess it's not, but...
Right, and can this use its ability to give it plus two to the damage roll? I don't know.
Read that ability again.
Well, once per turn, when Severius channels a spell through Blessing of Vengeance, Severius gains plus two to the damage rolls.
I think that's the really big question.
Yep.
I think it would get affected just as an initial reaction to it, mainly because it's being channeled like a spell, but doesn't count as a spell.
That's the question.
So it gets the plus two pow, but it doesn't get the incorporeal.
Yeah.
At least that's what I think.
We're going to have to get clarification on that one.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of my assumption at the moment, but we'll see. Mm-hmm. Also, the Blessing of Vengeance basically gets Defensive Strike without the mat penalty.
Yeah.
It's great. Its imprint basically gives it Bushwhack. It can attack, then move for a focus point.
Mm-hmm.
It can free itself up from being tied up and walk away. That's handy.
Does it ignore free strikes in that movement?
It does not.
Okay. So that's still something.
But cannot run, charge, or slam during that activation.
Right. So it is very much like Bushwhack.
Yep. He's got range. He still has powerful charge. And his repulsion shield pushes you back 2 inches instead of one.
So if you're in base to base and you have reach, you still get your second swipe.
Yep.
But if you hit him again, then as long as you don't take out the shield, then you're out of there.
Yep.
And then you're free to channel.
And he's only 8 points more than a regular Revenger.
That's ridiculous.
I'm sorry, 12 points more.
Still.
Yep.
All right, Fire Salvation. I love this guy. He only really got to do things on one turn, but there's a lot of potential. I'm just going to get down to the meat of it real quick. He's basically a Crusader with one extra speed and one extra mat, which is huge. He can spend one focus point and gains boosted melee attack rolls, period. Wow. When it destroys an enemy, it can immediately make another attack against someone else.
Now he has to use a weapon for that, right?
With one of his melee weapons. Right. This is correct. So if he has no arms,
if he's trampling, he does not get the boost.
Right. Now, if he tramples, he can still auto-boost everything.
Sure.
But he won't get additional dies.
And wait, he gets auto-boosted?
Trample attack. Is that what you mean, Dave?
Yeah, if he uses this imprint, all his melee attacks are boosted.
Oh, but you only get the die on if you use a weapon. The extra,
you only get the controlled berserk if you're using a weapon.
Right,
so you won't get the extra attack.
Yes. Right. This is really good. I walked through, three or four Bane Thralls.
There are a couple of Bane Thralls. Maybe there may have been a troll or two.
Yeah, and I missed one of them because I rolled
he's up to
crap.
A mat six.
Yeah. But, I mean, I hit one with my mace, killed it. Attacked the second with my mace and actually missed. I rolled really abysmal.
But use the fist.
So then I punched it, and then I can make it a free attack. Well, I can switch back to the mace.
Sure.
You're not tied to the weapon you used.
Right.
So it worked really well.
Yes, it did.
His mace is just like original Kriessa's weapon. It dispels upkeep spells, and it causes fire.
Imagine that.
Of course. Of course it does.
At this point, why not?
Come on. It's a POW 18 mace. If that didn't kill you, are you really going to care about the fire? I mean, unless you're a warcaster, which if you let the Jack get to your warcaster in the first place, it's got a few other abilities. I'm not going to go into all of them. I'll go into one more. If a protectorate model gets killed in 5 inches of it, it gets to move and attack. That's awesome.
Whatever.
That's particularly bad. Didn't really get to use that in our game, I don't think.
I didn't use it because Bond of Life killed all my guys.
Ah, there you go.
And Bond of Life hosed me. Yeah, that was a fair trade-off. I don't really care.
Oh, sure.
But, yeah, so it can walk up there and attack with its mat 6.
You combine that with the Vassal?
Yeah.
Yes. Ugh.
So, how much more is that than a regular Crusader?
20 points, and it's worth everyone. Well,
at least it's 20 points. I mean, to a Protector player, 20 points is like an infinity. You know,
yeah, I mean, that's like a whole extra cheap-ass units. So.
But put that with Resnik or Aminad Raza.
Mm-hmm. Moving, and then moving again.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, Mike's going to love that, Jack.
Yeah, I don't want to think about this anymore with Haman.
All right, yeah. I'll move on real quick then. Roven and the Honor Guard, 3-man character unit. 71 points. That's my only complaint about this unit. It's expensive. I like it. It didn't do as much in our game, but that's because I think it just didn't get in the right position. Mm-hmm. One thing it did do, though, is Roven has a special ability that protects everyone in his command radius, which is 9, from enemy upkeep spells, animi, and continuous effects, which meant my Jax did not get corroded, which meant the Cankerworm could not armor pierce them.
More protector layering of a...
Yep. He also has something that can remove, like we were talking about earlier, stealth, invisibility, and corporeal, and that kind of stuff, if you're in his command range.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he's in base-to-base with his buddies, this is something I really like. He's got his 2 bodyguards, and they're all armor 15. Any model in this unit gets a +3 armor cumulative for every other model in this unit it's in base-to-base with.
So they can get +6 each.
So basically, if they're running in a triangle, touching each other, they're armor 21, and they all have 8... I'm sorry... Roven has 5 damage, and the bodyguards have 8.
Where are they touching each other, Dave?
Oh, you know where they're touching
each
other.
He's a priest.
Other. Enough said.
Yes.
So in the rectory?
In the rectory. You know, they're fearless, and the halberds on the Exemplar, who are actually Exemplar models, so they fuel Gravis and Weapon Masters, Pile 11. They basically have set defense, and they share it with anyone else they're base-to-base with.
So if you really wanted to, you could stagger them and have guys even in between to get more.
Absolutely. Well,
or even
just the 2
somebody.
Bodyguards. Just the 2 bodyguards. Gravis doesn't get that.
Okay, but you said anybody touching in base to base.
Any warrior saying? Model.
So you could walk them up behind a unit. That
of bastions.
Have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then one more ability that's worth mentioning here is that anybody within 3 inches, or any protectorate model within 3 inches of Roven, any model that they directly hit with a ranged or melee attack suffers fire.
You know, it pretty much seems like it's becoming with the Protectorate of Minoth, the way that you're going to win against them is simply because you're playing against a guy that can't possibly keep up with all the stacked over rules to know, oh, no, you can't do anything because this guy does this and this guy does this to this and this and that and the other, unless he's got like a computer or he's just a total like an uber geek like Dave, who will know it all.
I think befuddling a protector player is probably the best path to victory at this point.
It's an interesting tactic.
Yeah.
Especially if they bring in pirates to supplement their own forces. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because, I mean, just in what you've read there, you've got, I think you've had 3 different rule, you know, 3 different units or models that were stacking over everything else. You've really got to keep up on that. And I know for me, I'm that's hard for me to do in a game. And with Signar, I don't have that much, luckily, because I'm just not that smart.
Well, I think it's just another example of rules bloat in the game.
I feel like I've read a book already. You know, I mean, I feel like that kind of mental tired.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, I'm going to try and pick it up and get to these kind of
quickly.
Maybe
I'm just tired of Dave.
Well, everyone's tired of Dave.
It, yeah.
All right, the Exemplar Bastions. I want to love them. I don't think they're bad, but the speed 4 really hurts. They're basically 5-8 hit point mana war to an extent with a few extra abilities. One is if one of them gets hit with an attack, an enemy attack, they can send a damage to their buddies, and they can split it up however they want as long as they don't assign more damage to that person than they have boxes remaining.
Mm-hmm.
On top of that, whenever anybody in this unit attacks, and they are weapon masters, and they start at 11, whenever they attack, they add a number of marked boxes on their health to the damage roll.
So if you need to in a pinch, you deliberately damage them and let them go to town.
Absolutely.
These guys sound sick.
So really? Like the leader, I shoot him twice with Kel and once with Iris in the back, give him 5 points of damage, and he's a pile plus strength 16 weapon master. Now, there's some trick to using that ability. First off, you can use it to kill other people to deny stuff like we were talking about with Gorshade.
Right.
On top of that, like you charged him with a Bane Thrall.
Right.
Actually, you missed with one. This is a crappy roll.
Right, right.
But you charged one with the Bane Thrall. You hit it for 10 points of damage. The guy only had 5.
Right. So you distributed 2 to each, right?
I actually put 2 on each to up their damage. I could have taken all 10 and used it to effectively wipe out 5 boxes worth of guy, which is right. one guy.
Right.
Basically half the damage you did to me. But I went ahead and spread it out because I wanted to, A, deny you a Bane Thrall,
mm-hmm.
and B, I wanted to give them all higher POW.
Sure.
Turns out they didn't do anything else that game. But you still have to kind of be careful on what you, you know, when you send damage and you just let them die, because you can go overboard, damage them, trying to make them cool. And if you hurt them so much that they're all basically one wound guys, they're going to go down really quick.
I can see them easily holding points.
Yep.
Coven players often have to learn that task when because anything that's hit by the Egregore, the damage is distributed among the witches in a similar manner.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's always a balancing act.
With the witches, it's so rare that you actually want to have one of them die.
No.
So it's usually an even distribution with those chicks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this sounds just so bad on them because it's a tough unit. I mean, like you're saying,
exactly.
you're fighting against Manowars.
Speaking of tough, they're not tough, but if they're in base-to-base with each other, they can't be knocked down.
And that's
so good. If Rupert makes them tough.
Right. So you've got this unit that, yeah, like you said, you try to kill them and, I'm just going to spread out my damage, so you can't even like kill me on a charge. So that's a really tough nut to crack.
The Hierophant, my Warcaster attachment, 19 points.
I got you beat, 18.
Yeah, mine's better.
Mine's better.
All right,
hey, I'd rather have R2-D2 than the Sycophant.
Yeah, totally.
Really quickly, he increases any spell that the caster casts from himself by 3 inches. He's fearless. He has field transfer, which also the squire has. If he's touching the warcaster, he shares focus for armor. He has 2 special abilities. One says that the warcaster can spend 1 less focus to cast a spell, and the other one heals the warcaster for D3. Hello, Harbinger.
Mm-hmm.
And while he's near your warcaster, you can cast spells on your troops regardless of line of sight.
Does he not have a +3-inch range, or is that just the squire?
He does both. Oh, the Squire affects the control radius. He increases
the
range of spells.
The Squire lets you increase the range. Oh, yeah. He does the spell range. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think both of those are pretty comparable. I think they're both really good.
I don't think
the War Dog sounds all that great. Or I may have the name wrong, but I know Tim seems to think he's just awesome. But in reading the Cawdor one, I didn't think it held up to the other two as well.
I think the War Dog's interesting. It's definitely not on the level of the Hierophant or the Squire. And I know that Crick's players were, at least some of them were upset that we didn't seem to get an official one, but then you kind of turn around and say, well, we've had one since Prime.
Yeah.
They're called Scarlocks.
Well, but we've got...
Derelist.
Yeah, your Scarlocks are better than Juniors, by far, because of what they can do. But still, I mean, it's...
That's debatable.
It's kind of it's an equivalent of a Scarlock's like a Junior Warcaster, a Journeyman Warcaster, but still.
Last mile that I took... Actually, no. I did take Apagyrus, which I guess I should cover too. But the monk actually didn't do much for me. He's decent. He's got a bunch of abilities. One says, you know, he basically has Epikaya's, the more people in melee with me, the cooler I get. On top of that, though, if he's in melee with 2 people, he pushes with his attacks. And if he's in melee with 4 people, he slams with his attacks. This sounds good, and it's awesome against shield wall troops. But as Josh did to me, if your guys spread out where he can't engage them, then it's not nearly as useful.
Because he has perfect balance and not acrobatics.
Right. He can't go over models to get in the middle of the line.
Right.
He does get +2 melee range in the charge because of flying kick. And he's a Weapon Master 9 with Pugilist, so he gets actually 3 attacks.
And cumulative pluses, right?
Yep. And his coolest thing, though, in my opinion, is going to be Shifting Wind Stance. After his normal movement, he has to forfeit his action to enter a Shifting Wind Stance. This is an interesting wording. It's different than Vilmon. After his normal movement, he has to do it.
So he cannot run and do it.
Right, because your activation ends after you run.
Right.
So he walks, goes in Shifting Wind Stance, gets +2 defense, bumping it up to a respectable 17, and he can't be targeted by CRAs, CMAs, so that's good. Anytime he's missed by an attack, he can immediately move up to his speed in inches. And that lasts until the end of your turn. So if they try and shoot him 3 times and miss, he's 18 inches from where he started.
Yep.
Yeesh.
Wow.
Very situational, but cool.
Mm-hmm.
Lastly, I'll touch on Epic Iris real quick. She's initial Iris. She lost all her special bolts, but her attack now does what I consider is a fixed disruption.
Mm-hmm.
Any model hit by any of her attacks loses all focus on them.
Right.
A Warjack hit suffers disruption and can't be allocated or channeled the next turn.
Mm-hmm.
Which is it takes away using Iris to disrupt the Warcaster to basically screw your opponent out of a turn. I like this.
It's a lot like Resnik's Feat in a way, mm-hmm. in the sense that you just drop whatever yep. you have and you still get him next turn.
You can still use it as an assassination attempt, but your opponent still gets to take his turn.
Doesn't change the Evil Ad kill.
Right. Also,
well, except she doesn't have a soul.
Right. Also, if she hits you with her crossbow, any upkeep spells of your army on you go away, and the controlling Warcaster takes the controlling model takes D3 points.
It only gets enemy upkeep spells?
Yeah, that's if she. I think that's if she hits like if you.
Because Tim was saying how he wanted to hit his own guys to get rid of enemy. Well, I guess that'd still be an enemy upkeep spell.
And it's an enemy upkeep spell on any model, and then whoever casts that takes a D3 damage.
Right. So you can get the troopers that have it on.
I use it to get rid of sudden death.
Right.
She is a retribution partisan, which is something we mentioned before.
Mm-hmm.
So if she's fielded with a retribution army, she counts as a retribution model. She's still AD. She gained stealth. Did she have it before?
No.
She had invisible.
She gained stealth. She lost invisibility. If you miss her with an enemy magic attack, it hits you instead.
Just like Fiona, right?
Just like Fiona, I think.
Whiplash.
Mm-hmm. I love the tactical tip in Legends. Yeah. That's the best one I've seen.
Tactical tip, Whiplash. If you're considering targeting Iris with an offensive spell, read her rules completely. Twice.
I mean, it's true. It's like,
sounds like a protector model, huh?
Yeah, pretty much.
The last thing that we should mention here is that, she's fearless now, too, by the way.
Oh,
she wasn't before.
That's correct.
Also, you mentioned with the Myrmidon, mm-hmm. Jax, but she doesn't have the thing where the Jack thing is different now. It's not.
That's what I'm actually getting ready to talk about that now. Yep. She lost technological intolerance. She's no longer afraid of Jax. They are afraid of her. Any Warjack that's not a Myrmidon, hint, hint, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, it's within 5 inches of Iris, cannot channel spells or be allocated focus. Her use has changed tremendously now.
She's a backfield model, I think.
I think that you can move her up into your opponent's army, and even if she dies, keep them from allocating focus for a turn.
On a specific Jack.
She's just a great big backfield.
Walk up, mm-hmm. shoot something with a crossbow, get rid of the spell, do D3 damage, stop Jax from getting focus, and maybe die. But if that's the turn that you really need to mess with your opponent's plans, congratulations, you've just done it. Now, she's 38 points now. You know, she's mm-hmm. another 9 points. That's kind of a big sacrifice for 38 points.
Considering she dies just as easily as the original Iris.
Absolutely. She's no tougher in that department. Her rat is 9 now.
It's always been 9.
Oh, I thought it was 7. Is it? All right.
Does she still have camouflage?
She does.
Okay.
And she also keeps Pathfinder. And she gains Snipe. She no longer has the Death Bolt, but she has Snipe, so she can pick damage.
Sniper, not Snipe.
I'm sorry.
It's not actually Snipe anyway.
It is Sniper.
Yes. Oh, right.
Yes.
She has a Sniper ability, not
right. I thought she had a different ability.
So, Kador's back down to, you know, what are they up to? 8, yeah. 9, 12 Widowmakers now? Whatever.
Whatever it was before.
Yeah.
Well, Kador's still going to want to have incentive to play regular Iris because of Death Bolt and how differently they word it, so.
Yeah.
It's definitely a good choice of difference between a regular and normal model.
Yeah, let's be honest. I think Epic Iris is really cool. I like her. But when you go to a competitive event, I think regular Iris is still going to see more play.
Well,
because she can disrupt the Warcaster.
Yeah. Sure.
So that was pretty much what I took and how they worked. I think the only thing I didn't really mention how they work is the Bastions. I moved them upfield, and they kind of found themselves a wall to stand behind and stab Bane Thralls over.
With the reach, though, that wasn't really not a problem with them.
With reach and their high mana.
I had the extra defense because of the obstruction that you were attacking over, but still, I'm a
12.
Defense 12. That's not something that you can't easily hit.
They did really well.
Yeah.
I want to try them in some more open field environments to see how they do, mm-hmm. but they did well. I really want to like them. That speed 4 gives me pause, but that's the only complaint. It does, but yeah, I could be putting them on. I could pipe a speed 6 unit. They could be going 8.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But for them specifically, does that extra? I mean, every other turn, does the extra 2 inches make up for their only 4 speed?
It does, but does it make up for the fact that the Piper's not piping anyone else yet? I don't know. And I think that's going to take some experimenting to determine. Definitely has promise, though.
I can see him as good bodyguards for your Warcaster.
Especially Resnik.
Absolutely.
Medium basis.
Screening the model, yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I have. So let's go ahead, since I just covered mine, mm-hmm. let's talk there. Josh,
mm-hmm.
what do you think of what the Protector got?
I thought, and out of all Legends, I thought Protector got a pretty good deal.
That's because they're the best faction.
Well, no. But, I mean, your particular army, you had more new stuff in there So you were able to play around with a little bit more than I was. But for me, the Protectorate's new models and units seem very similar to me, I guess. I mean, I know they're very different. Rowan and his bodyguards are three guys. Bastions are big five base guys. But I think the Protectorate stuff is a little bit more bland in terms of what it looks like, or what I think of it in fluff perspective. They're all, you know, oh, they're knightly guys in shining armor. Well, dull shining armor because they're Protectors. They're all bad guys. But anyway, I just don't see much variation. Yeah, I know there's variation, but I just don't see a lot of it there.
Yeah, I can see that. We definitely got exemplar stuff in this book. It makes the exemplar-themed army really viable.
Which is cool for people who like to do the theme thing, which I'm always up for.
I plan on it once a few more things come out.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know the Piper's an exemplar, right?
Honorary. May as well be, sure.
They're going to mount him.
So, Stu, you play Krix. You also play some Kador currently, right? So from both those perspectives, what do you think of how awesome my stuff is?
I definitely think Protectorate got the best models out of this book, bar none. I think everyone got some really cool models, and I think everyone really got some interesting little new tricks. But Protectorate really walked away with the Yeehouse, man, this stuff is awesome award. I mean, there's a couple areas of concern that you highlighted there, but for the most part, I can't think of a single model that isn't awesome-tastic good times.
Yeah, we have downsides, but we also have ways to make up for that, I think.
Exactly. And there are some, and like Josh said, unfortunately, I have to lament with him. I think there are some real problems with what the Krix got. And again, not to sound like a whiner, but I think what it is Igor Shade, and both Igor Shade and Morten Abra, the two casters in Legends for Krix, play vastly different than every other Krix caster has thus far.
I think so, for the most part.
I think that Gorshade is definitely unique in that he
wants
Terminus? To...
What about
Terminus? Plays... is a unique category in his own.
This is true. He's... Yeah.
But, I mean, it's... Gorshade really, even more so than his original form, really wants to get into melee. Like, super bad. Oh, man. I can't wait. And Morten Abra is playing a very much a Darius and Karchev kind of game where she wants the Warjack to basically beat the snot out of you. So it's, I think the reason that they're kind of underwhelming at first is because they just play so differently than what we were used to as a faction.
Mm-hmm.
With Igor Shade, though, I mean, I'm used to playing troop heavy lists. And so in that sense, Igor Shade is not new. But the way that he requires you to manage your troops is a little different, I think. Especially when that management includes losing them on purpose.
Right.
Yeah, he's definitely playing a Zal kind of game.
I wouldn't even go that far. Zal gets something for his dead guys. We just get more dead guys.
Pat, how about you?
In terms of what?
How much do you love the Protectorate?
Well, you know how much I love the Protectorate, which is to say not at all. I just have to go back to what I said sort of earlier. It looks like I agree with Stu. I think that the Protectorate really... made out really well. I think Signar did too. I mean, we'll get to that later. I think they made out really well, but I think again, in terms of look at the overall pros and cons, I think the Protectorate did probably the best here.
Well, we did have to make up for losing our Hierarch. You know, they had to give us something, right?
Who wasn't
well,
you, a model
you mean the,
in the
you mean
place?
The Hierarch that wanted to sacrifice all of his own, you know, disciples, but Stryker was the one who saved them. Oh, that guy. Oh, okay, whatever.
It's
anyway.
Okay. He had a goofy hat.
So I think sounds like, you know, probably some of the Menites are going to start worshiping Stryker now because they were his, you know, he was their savior. But anyway,
oh,
we'll
Lord,
see.
That'd be funny.
That would be funny.
Stryker converts. News at 5. All right.
But back to what I said, I think there's a lot of stacking up of rules, which is not any different from before with Menoth. You know, as you get all this synergy, you know, before there's just tons more synergy now. So you've got a lot more options to play with, a lot more denial to stack on top of the previous denial and to stack on top of the denial to come. So it's just, I think it's a lot of, I think there's a lot of strategy to playing Menoth.
Okay.
And yeah, that's my take.
All right. Well, I want to actually have a discussion about your guys' stuff too. But before we do that, I'd actually like to hear your guys' thoughts on Nightmare and the Ghost Raiders, because you didn't actually use those.
Right. I was trying to put in the Ghost Raiders, but I really wanted the extra Bane Thralls in there. For the elite cadre bonuses,
sure.
Which in the end I probably should have just thrown the Ghost Raiders in there anyway. Not having played the Ghost Raiders, keep that in mind. I don't know exactly how effective they're going to be. I'd like to think that they're going to go up there and just slaughter a bunch of stuff, for example, to get the extra models that you can add to the unit.
They have to charge that, though.
They do not. It's just any time they kill a model, isn't it? Or is that the
limited model charge? No, it's their special order.
Is that the special order that they have?
Yeah, and here's the thing. It has to be a charge attack, so you can't be right. in melee already.
Right, and another problem with that is that if you're not Blackbane, your mat's a 5. What are you going to hit with a mat of 5?
Something that Gorshade froze? Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
But honestly, yes, that's a possibility.
Well, but... Crippling Grasp.
Crippling Grasp, yeah, if you want to... I mean, I would probably take them with the Negra anyway.
Demoniac, plus 2 mat.
Demoniac's also a perfectly viable option there, too.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Now, granted, Berserk. The Berserks won't create more guys, but...
No, but the extra mat's always a help. So, yeah, a few of our casters certainly have ways to up your mat. Oh, they have an ability, and I can't think of what it is off the top of my head. When one of them is destroyed, living models within an inch catch fire. So I can see maybe running them deliberately into a group of enemy models and then making your opponent choose whether or not to kill them and set their own guys on fire.
Man, I'm hoping I'm playing Epic.
But do I really want to spend 104 or 106 points, however much they are, to do that?
Probably not.
Now, they are incorporeal, and as soon as one of them makes an attack, the entire unit becomes corporeal. So the incorporeal is only going to get them so far, especially mm-hmm. nowadays whenever Ayana can say, you know, do whatever. Or Chain Lightning will hose them as much as it always has.
Sure. Or Ashes to Ashes.
Ashes to Ashes, any multiple.
Or an Ashes to Ashes like ranged attack.
What's Epic Vlad's spell? Something Ruin.
Ruination
is another one. Anything that, you know, can kill multiple incorporeal models. Sure. It's going to ignore that, of course. Or walk Siege up there and make them... that doesn't make them lose control.
Siege, Illumination I believe, does.
If that's the case.
Like Roven can.
Sure. There are plenty of ways to ignore the incorporeal. So I would want to play them before I spoke further on them. Mm-hmm. Not that I've really spoken much on them now with any authority.
There's one thing this podcast has. It's authority.
That's right.
It's authority or authority?
It's opposite day where we have authority.
I don't know.
Okay. Blackburns definitely is...
Blackbane.
Blackbane, sorry. Blackbane's definitely an esoteric unit. I would never take him against Protectorate. I don't think I'd ever use him on an all-comers list, mainly because they're not good against all-comers. Anything that's going to have, as you said, a decent way of dealing with multiple incorporeal models is just going to take these guys apart. The one rule that doesn't make any sense to me is on Blackbane himself, the second wind, which is when he kills an enemy model, he can... heal all the damage back.
I think that's just a little extra that's never meant to actually come into play.
It's never going to. He's defense 13, armor 14 with 5 hit boxes.
14, I thought he was armor 12.
Yeah, I think,
armor
got 12. I think those are flipped.
Yeah, he's even weaker than that, I think.
I knew it was one off. The problem is, what's he shrugging off?
He's 13-12.
He's 13-12. He's 13-12 with 5 hit boxes. What's he shrugging off? I mean, unless you're rolling really badly on a blast damage roll, there's not a whole lot that he's going to survive that he's going to even want to heal off. Mm-hmm. Not to mention get rid of him, and there goes the order that, you know, right. that special fun time order.
You can Gorshade's bring him back.
No, because he's a character. No, he can't bring anything in the unit back.
Gotcha.
Derek Gray, though, can give them that order.
Derek can, because they're undead. Yes. Right.
So if you're going to take the pirates, probably take... Derek, at which point probably bring
Soul Hunters,
because they're going to be good.
Right.
If I'm taking Undead Pirates, I'm taking the Revenant crew.
Yeah. I can see them in a really cool fluff army. I mean, I will definitely take these guys with 2 full units of Revenant and Rengrave. There may not be much synergy between them and Rengrave, and even not even with Terminus, really.
Black Ogryn?
Black Ogryn, even. Yeah, sure. But, I mean, they're really standalone. There's not a whole lot you can do besides debuff the enemy, I think, to help them out.
What about your guys' cannon you got?
It looks pretty cool.
I think it's got a great potential.
Ghostly shots.
Hit something.
That's going to suck.
The thing that's really cool, I think, is the +2 to hit. I mean, you hit something and it's marked with a +2 damage marker, basically. And anything that attacks it on your side is going to get that extra.
Yeah. And the fact that they can shoot through everything pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Oh, one thing I want to mention about the Ghost Raiders. This probably wouldn't come up too much because you wouldn't want to sack them necessarily. But Terminus cannot sack pawn them because they're incorporeal. So you can't even use them for that.
Unless they've made an attack that turn.
Yes. That's a good point, actually.
Nightmare?
I think he looks awesome. I'll definitely take him with the Negra.
He's only, what, 10 points more?
He's 121. He's 11 points, I think.
Okay.
10 or 11, something like that.
Moo-hoo-ha-ha-ha is all I can think about when I think about Nightmare. He's he's actually a Slayer worth fielding now, which is ridiculous, even in concept. I mean, had you come to me 3 months earlier and said there's going to be a Slayer coming out that you're going to actually want to put on the field, I probably would have slapped you in the face. But I think she's way fun. I think he's way fun. I think he's fun with or without Denegra. All he really gains with Denegra is stealth. That's mm-hmm. fine. It's the fact that imprint, he has an imprint of Ghostly. That's really the moneymaker for
that's
me.
That's disgusting.
With Morten Abra, the Deathjack and him both running around, just ignoring all sorts of movement penalties. It's good times.
I think he's just as squishy as a regular Slayer, though, which is a problem.
He is going to be a bit of a glass cannon in terms of at least on a Jack level. But
he's got the reach, though, which is big.
That reach.
And doesn't he have Prey?
Yes.
Yeah, it's essentially Prey.
Like I said, with Morten Abra, I think he's going to be good times.
Yeah, so it's a combination of like a regular Prey and Predation where he can move and he gets extra damage on the Prey.
It also kind of traps him in place.
A little bit, yeah.
Board control stuff aside, which is always handy, especially in Steamroller, I think he does kind of personify what, you know, the Crixion glass cannon type mm-hmm. effect. I think actually Gorshade does to an extent too. You know, I die to kill you. And if I do it right, I die to kill you and bring a guy back.
Right.
Who then dies to kill you and bring a guy back as nauseam. I am probably going to be fielding errants more than I used to now, simply mm-hmm. because I'm going to need to neuter some of the stuff Crix can do to me. Because, I don't know, if I hadn't had errants in that game, if I had something else like Idrian's, mm-hmm. instead of 20 Bane Thralls, I would have been fighting 32.
I think I would have done better to just advance a little bit more first turn to get the Bile Thralls up there, because errants die to Bile Thrall purges like anything else will. Mm-hmm. And once I finally got the Bile Thrall up there, I took out all but one of your errants. And then yep. I was free to move up, but by that time I had let you advance a little too far. So.
Yeah, they're definitely that.
Yeah.
But I see a lot of effects from the Crix of I'm going to kill you, and on top of that, I'm going to get cool from it.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to stop you from killing me, which fortunately is what the Protectorate excels at.
Yep.
So unfortunately, Protectorate is a little bit of an anti-Crix now. Well, more than it was before.
Right, I was about to say it always has been to an extent.
So sometimes you bring rock to the paper.
Yeah, absolutely. I just know not to bring that army against you again.
How about you, Pat?
I haven't really taken a real good look at the new Crix stuff, so this is really my first exposure to it. So I'm looking forward to playing against it, really, to have more of an opinion.
Sounds like most of it can still be shot.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you shoot stuff, and, you know, you could shoot stuff with jacks now.
My big medium troll bases aren't being blocked by my little bases up front.
No, they're not. I think that... Actually, we should mention that's probably a good thing about the troll cannons. They can guard Gorshade if you need them to.
Yeah, because he can't Cloak of Shadows anymore.
But I think Kray's going to be fun against Crix.
Yeah.
It's going to be an interesting fight.
Yeah, because Kray's the other guy in Signar that actually gives us the ability to hit the incorporeal and stealth stuff, like you were saying before. I'm anxious to try that out because that looks like it's going to be interesting. It is only his battle group that he gives that to, but...
Right.
Still, the way it sounds, I may be wrong, but the way that sounds is he drops that five inch,
AoE. Ring, huh? The 5-inch AoE.
Yeah, the 5-inch AoE anywhere within his control radius, which can be extended by the squire, and his battle group can target it. So that means if it's on the other side of a forest, they can target it. Unless I'm wrong, I'm thinking, boom. So you with Kray, you're not hiding behind a forest.
I think it's the biggest irony that Kray is a cavalry model, but he needs it in order to keep up with his jacks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that an all-pony army actually doesn't work all that well. When everyone thought, when they first came out, it was like, oh, well, great, nothing but horses. And it's like, no, well, that probably won't work out to your advantage.
That was a nice surprise, though.
Yeah.
Because he definitely makes you want to take jacks.
Except for the Kotor players who hate it, because why did Signar get the model on the horse?
Yeah, that's coming from the faction that now has two Drakens. Just you know.
And their own solo on top of that.
Right. They have three, you know, cav solo.
Four if they take Brocker.
Right. But within their own faction, they have three solos plus their cav.
Exactly.
No, everyone else has one.
Actually, Kray, I don't think can allow Mage Sight, his 5-inch AoE spell. I don't think that allows you to ignore incorporeal, but it does for stealth and invisibility and camouflage and all that crazy stuff.
Sure.
Thanks, Josh. You're right. I just looked it up and I misspoke.
All right, so that just about does it for our part one of covering Legends. Next week, we're going to try and cover Kador and Signar. We're going to have Pat play himself a game, 750-point game with Kray, using as much of his new stuff as he can, which might be difficult given that most of its unit attachments.
That's true.
Yeah, that's going to make it interesting with Signar, because it is...
Right.
It's a lot of different stuff for existing units.
So we'll be have you play against someone playing Kador, playing Zarkova. That'll be our topic for next time.
Yep.
And until then, thanks for listening, and see you later.
Sayonara.
Adios.
Later.
Iron Agenda is copyright 2008 by its hosts and released under the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivative Works 3.0 United States license, opening and closing music provided courtesy of Joshua Salter.